All right, so I was thinking about this today, and then as Brother Mike was bringing out his lesson, I was thinking about it more and more. It would be so much easier to just, anytime somebody pops off with some nonsense like this, it'd just be so much easier to just be like, no, you're wrong. That's dumb. And they'd be like, well, and you could just be like, no, trust me, you're dumb. That's stupid. Just,
here's your card.
Yeah, yeah. It would, sometimes you hear stuff and you're just like, oh, no. But we have a responsibility to, with sound doctrine, exhort and convince the gainsayers, right? As much as it seems like, well, they're not going to get it, or they're not going to believe it. About a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, we sent a letter to a church and a questionnaire. We had a man come and present himself as a member, and we sent a letter to a church questionnaire. They answered some of the questions wrong. They said they'd let anybody from the congregation perform a baptism. They don't take wine for the Lord's Supper, but they fellowship with the church that does take wine for the Lord's Supper. And qualifications of a pastor, they would consider a man to as a pastor potentially if he was remarried. They'd consider the circumstances. And I was like, it'd be so much easier to just say, forget it, you know, you guys are wrong, we're just going to rebaptize them. But we've formulated a response and threw some scriptures in there and sent in, and it was like, we're going to rebaptize them, but here's why, you know. So anyways, we have that responsibility, and, you know, we have to be able to defend the faith. Some of the same types of people Brother Mike's talking about. So maybe people know, maybe people don't know, I don't know. But, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, Church at Crestwell, we had 19 people walk into services one Sunday morning. 8 of those people and 6 of their children, 8 of them became church members, and 6 of their children were coming regularly. Not all of them believed like this, but a large group of them were very influenced by IFB, or New IFB, and IFB. And it took a while for some of them they all eventually left, but some left sooner than others, and I don't think they all weren't devoted to these other ideas. But what started the honeymoon period from breaking down is some of these ideas started to come out, and a church member at the time just said, you're wrong, that's stupid. And that started, then now some emotions are involved. Now, instead of it just being about the Bible, and that church member left too. That church member who had grown up in church, that church member whose grandfather was a pastor, who knew the doctrines, but he literally said, that's dumb. And as he's walking out the church, I said, hey, brother, hold on. And he said, you deal with these people. And he's never been back. And I think he's never been back partially because he's embarrassed. But also, he wasn't willing to contend for the faith. And I called him the next day and I was like, brother, this is our job. This is our job. It's our responsibility. Oh, you just like those people. And I said, no, it's not about these people. I want them to, it's not like, I'm not just saying this because they're my friends or they're nice or they drive nice cars. This is our job. We're to contend for the faith. We're to be ministers of reconciliation, minister to the word. And so Brother Mike.
That attitude that you're sharing, this is our job, that's just not for you.
Yeah.
For the membership, and that's what you were trying to convey. It's for the membership of the body. That's the body's job.
Yeah. And a strong church, I know I've heard this, I believe this, a strong church isn't because the pastor's strong. A membership that is strong, that can teach and minister and reconcile and support one another. It's not just, like you said, Brother Mike, it's not just one person's job. Those joints are to supply for one another. So anyways, all right, let's turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 14. So last class, last weekend, we talked about this whole scientific method, and it's, all right, say it again. It's a way it's just a label, okay? Good science, bad science, whatever. It's just a process, it's a way of studying the Bible. And we're going to go through a doctrine. My plan is for us to go through the doctrine tonight and tomorrow. And I'm not saying this is the only way, I'm not saying it's the perfect way, but it's a way to study out a doctrine. It's a way to dive in to the scriptures. And again, it's not the only way, but we definitely have to be sure that our doctrines are sound, you know, that they're wholesome, that they're not full of any corruption or depravity or holes. And like I say, we have a responsibility to give, what was that verse, Brother Mike? Give the sense. You give the sense. That's our responsibility. It's easy for me to just give two or three verses and say, ah, Brother Eli, if you don't get it, you're just dumb. You know? That's easy for me. Well, I'll throw up my hands and say, well, he's an idiot. You know, he's never going to get it. But, you know, Paul, he spent 2 years in that school of Titius. Going there every day, contending with the Jews, contending with them, and I don't know how many converts he had, but it was a place of learning. It was a place where the scriptures were talked about freely. It was a place, and he used those opportunities, and he used that. So, so question is, I even brought this from work. It's not working. I'll leave it here. I'll leave it here for somebody else. Can a woman speak in church? All right. Hopefully nobody brought their feelings. Leave them outside the door. No. Can a woman speak in church? Okay, so background research. I know I told you guys last week to cross that part out, and after evaluation and some prayer and meditation, I decided we would uncross that part out. So now, like I was telling Brother Mike, the reason last week I wanted us to not consider the background information portion is our background information shouldn't come from our preformed beliefs or opinions. Our background information should come from those landmarks, those facts that have already been established. For example, well, we know that, Brother Mike said with the guy who called him, you know that you can't lose your salvation. So the question at hand, maybe it's necessary, maybe it's not, but if the audience, the person you're talking to or the class or whatever, if you need to go back and confirm that you can't lose your salvation, you can and you should be able to do that. But if you don't have to, then, but that would be our background research or our background information. So what are some things that we already know? So we're starting way up high. We're starting at 1,000 feet. We're taking a huge view, and hopefully we're going to narrow in on an answer to this question. So we're going to start with some established truths, some constants that we already know about what the Bible has to say. So 1 Corinthians 14, 33 tells us God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Now jump down to verse 40. Let all things be done decently and in order. So we know that God is a God of order. He is not a God of confusion. He's not a God that is inconsistent. Is that something that we know? All right. Like I said, we're starting way up high. We're starting far out, and we're gonna narrow in here. Brother Jim, would you get Psalms 18 and verse 30? Brother Scott, would you get Psalms 8 and verse 3? Brother Daniel, would you get 1 Corinthians 16 and 1? Michael, Titus 1 and verse 5? And I know I'm getting to a lot of verses here, but like I say, this is, we're kind of doing an exercise here about how you might, one might study a topic or study the scriptures. Brother Josh, Matthew 7, 13 and 14. All right, go ahead, Brother Jim.
As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. He is a buckler to all those that trust in him.
Okay, so God has a way, and this way is perfect. Okay, Psalms 8 and verse 3.
When I consider thy heavens, thy work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained.
All right, so I like to first hear, when I consider the heavens, when I consider the things that you've ordained. That word ordained is to set in order, or to order. All right, so God, again, God has an order. He has a way of doing things. He has a position. It's fair to say that God has a doctrine. God has an opinion. God has a stance. God has a direction on everything, and especially things that are mentioned in the Bible. So, all right, I didn't give any of these verses in Exodus, but Exodus 26, 17, Exodus 39, 37, these are just a few examples here where God directly told Moses to set the things in the tabernacle in order, to direct them a certain way, to do things like that. 1 Corinthians 16:1.
Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye.
All right. So, to... Go ahead, Michael.
Titus 1 verse
5. Titus 1 verse 5, yep.
For this cause I left thee in Crete, that thou shouldst set the order of things that are wanted, and ordain elders in every city as I appointed thee.
All right. To set in order, to straighten or to arrange. To straighten or arrange. And then Matthew 7, 13 and 14.
Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be in which go in thereat.
So
straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it.
Okay, so God has an order, and this is just our background research. These are just things, these are just established truths that we know, that the Bible makes clear. God is a God of order. He has a perfect way. He tells us to set these things, to arrange these things, to straighten these things the way according to His order. But we also know that there are other ways, that there are other paths, that there are other opinions. There are other thoughts and ideas out there, but they lead to destruction. Okay? So just this is just information that we're putting out there on the table. And we're going to analyze it. We're going to look at it. It's gonna have to harmonize, though. Like Brother Mike is bringing out in his class. It's got to harmonize. It cannot contradict. When we study the Bible, do we ever have to refer back to these established truths?
Amen.
Yeah. All the time. All the time. This example has been used here at the school for a long time. But, you know, think about tracking an animal if you're hunting or something. You know, I haven't done it as much as other people have, but I've done it. I've lost the tracks. I've lost the trail many times. What do you do when you lose the trail? You go back to the last... You go back and find it. You go back to... Now you can mark it on your phone and stuff, but you go back to the last place you saw tracks, you saw blood, you saw whatever. You go back to where you know. And you can think, okay, I went this way and I got lost, or I didn't find it. But up to right here, I was good. Up to right here, it all made sense. It all harmonized. It was all good. So sometimes we have to go back to these things. Sometimes we have to go back to what the Bible has already declared. All right, so if you're still in 1 Corinthians 13, 14, and these things, it would seem like, what does this have to do with this question? You know, you think of the verses we already read, and then it's like, wait a minute. What does these have to do with a woman speaking in church? Well, these are important.
So, are you going to show examples where women were with Christ and ask questions? Because that's what probably, I would, and I don't have those off my top of my head, you know. Martha and Mary.
Yeah, I would say.
Okay, so you're those, because those are, okay, I got these examples, what I do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, they were disciples of Christ.
And like I said, just because I do it this way doesn't mean it's how everyone has to do it. But if we have time this weekend, then yeah, we would get to those right here.
Well, in what Brother Mike said there, I was thinking of Mary and the sisters that went to the tomb, and I lost my train of thought.
All right, so 1 Corinthians 14:34, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak, but they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. So what I was told a couple years ago by church members, and we had a motion in business meeting, and because of the state of our church at that time, the vote passed. We could not have female Sunday school teachers, and women should not speak in church.
Where'd that come from?
It came from right here.
Yeah.
What does the verse say?
Says not to speak.
Says, let the women keep silence in churches. It's not permitted for them to speak.
Let it be done decently and in order.
Okay, so my hypothesis is that women can't speak in church. Now, I never got a clear answer because I asked, like, does that mean when they cross the threshold? Does that turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 2? What is that? Does it literally mean they're like they cannot utter a sound? I wasn't given any more of an answer. We couldn't have motion passed that we couldn't have Sunday school. None of the men wanted to teach Sunday school, and so. We had a woman Sunday school teacher at the time, so the motion passed. I couldn't, and by the way, I know we all have answers. This is stupid. This is dumb. Do I just get to stand up there and say, y'all are dumb? The church I grew up in, we had Sunday school for years. And I had a woman Sunday school teacher till I was 12 or 10. I don't get to say that. That's not giving the sense. That's not contending for the faith. That's not sound doctrine. So just keep that in mind.
So we had a similar thing. It never got to, you know, the floor to make a motion or anything like that. But its head began popping up in Bible studies and in, you know, side questions and all that. Women praying in church. Along the same lines.
Mm-hmm.
Insane, but not
Well, I straight brother Daniel off, so we've got off of
that. Thanks, appreciate that.
Yeah. Have a little controversy.
Yeah, brother Alex.
Well, I was going to say, you guys look for the 12th chapter, the 13th chapter, the 14th chapter, what it's all dealing with is spiritual gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you maybe teach on spiritual gifts, what are they, where they came from, and
before. And we're gonna get into that, so hold on to, totally, if you got more thoughts or whatever on that, we're gonna get into that. But that's exactly, like you said, that's where you have to go. You have to head there, you gotta use some other scriptures, right? You can't just say, well, that's dumb. How else are we gonna have services? Baptist churches have been having Sunday school classes for a long time. I mean, I guess you can do that. I guess maybe people could say that. And maybe, I don't know, in my experience, Baptists are pretty stubborn. People that are church members are pretty stubborn. So the only way to contend with this stuff is with the Bible. Brother Mike?
I mean, think about this. What if you didn't keep fighting this and other people, other members didn't keep fighting this? Where would the church be today?
Yeah.
Where would you be today?
Because that was just the tip. I didn't know it then.
Yeah, you know.
But that was just the tip of the iceberg of what was underneath.
And that's where teachers, you know, we just looked at this one tonight. Teachers need to sometimes fight. And you need to fight for what's the truth. And
right.
It's much easier if the fight is not just the pastor fighting,
yes,
but the body fighting.
Yes.
Because this is what the Bible says.
And it's important to know, you're not going to maybe find this out right away, but it's important to know what the impetus or the motivation behind these things are and where it's coming from. And I didn't know at the beginning it came out and they were, this is a teaching, this is a thought of the new IFB. So the new Independent Fundamental Baptist that came out of the IFB. This isn't the most dangerous teaching that they have, but what if this teaching would have got in and taken hold, and like you said, myself and others didn't continue to contend with it, then other teachings would have gotten in and taken hold. Now, like I say, we didn't have Sunday school, we didn't have a female Sunday school teacher for a while, but trust me, that was not a peaceful agreement in the church. It continued to be taught on, it continued to be preached about, it continued to be encouraged, and you know, eventually the weeds got out of there, Brother Nathan.
So wouldn't women covering their head go right alongside with this?
Yep. So let's turn over to 2 Peter. There was several hands. I want to make Brother Dan. Sorry, I can't keep track of them all.
Yeah, that's fine. I kind of went a different direction, but you better not base your teaching on, well, Baptists used to teach this or history. If that should never, everything ought to better come from you.
Yes, yes.
And you said, well, that might be a good example. But don't you teach on what the Bible says?
Yeah, yeah. And. You know, that's the quick answer. Well, and I heard that one too. Well, that's the way our church has done it for 50 years. That, you know, it's easy to get in a bad habit and your habits just keep going for a long time. You know, churches can do that. So you can't say, well, here's one. All our other, I've heard this. Our other sister churches do it. I've heard that one. That's not an okay answer. Our other sister churches, here's potluck again. Our other sister churches do potluck on the first Sunday of the month. Okay, I guess that's an okay answer. Because it's the Baptist calendar. But once you get past potluck on that list of doctrines that I gave you, you got to start using Bible. No, I'm teasing. But like that's one I've heard. I'm sure others have, well, our sister churches do it that way. Well, that's not good enough. Brother Nathan?
Can also get traditions confused with doctrines.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Exactly. All right. Oh boy, we're not going to get through this weekend. That's okay. 2 Peter chapter 2, All right, we're going to start looking at some, and some, Brother Mike and Brother Alex have already mentioned a couple of them. And so, not necessarily a specific order to go through all of our data, we're in the lab, we have our hypothesis. If I pour some ammonia on my copper pennies and I heat it up to 400 degrees, I can turn my copper pennies into gold. That's my hypothesis. I believe in myself. I feel good about that hypothesis. I might even throw some other chemical in there that I can't, some radon gas. I'll throw that in there too. That sounds good. That's my hypothesis. Great. Anybody can come up with a feeling, a thought, an opinion. Okay, but you gotta let the experiment, at some point you gotta let the Bible speak for itself. You have to examine the evidence, and then what the evidence puts out, that's where we get our, like Brother Daniel just said, that's where we get our conclusion from. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much I want those copper pennies to turn into gold.
Yeah.
I really want them to be gold.
Yeah.
They're super shiny now, you know. They expanded because I heated them up so much. Nope, they're not gold. Sorry. So we're going to start looking at some of these here. And like I say, not necessarily in any specific order. This is just the way I laid it out. First of all, how does God feel about those who go outside of his order? Just looking at the Bible. He has an order. How does God feel? And again, what does this have to do with women speaking in church? Well, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. But let's just see how God feels about those who go outside his order. 2 Peter chapter 2, 4, starting in verse 4. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly, and deliver just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. So this passage here gives us three different examples of three groups of people, three examples or three instances where people or the subjects went outside of God's order. And how did God feel about that? Well, in verse 4, the first example is the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. Okay? Verse 5, spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. What do we know about the old world? They were marrying, giving in marriage. The thoughts of men's hearts were evil continually. Right? Personally, because the Bible tells me that, and this is a little bit of a side note, but it goes to leaving God's order. What do we have today? Well, we don't just have homosexuality. We don't just have lesbians and gays and this and that. We have pedophilia. That's being taught as a sexual orientation. It's being accepted as a sexual orientation. It's being diagnosed as a mental health problem. And once you have a medical diagnosis, it's no longer your responsibility. So something that used to be evil is now... Why do I say all that? The Bible says the coming of the day of the Lord will be as the days of Noah. I think, this is just me thinking, I think that the day before Noah entered the ark, the stuff that's going on in the world today was going on and is even worse. So that would fall under the umbrella of they were out of God's order. Amen? I mean, the old world was out of God's order. And then lastly, Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, that's an easy one. Sodomy. It's out of order. So, examples there. Turn over to Jude. Jude, starting in verse 5. I will therefore put you in remembrance, though you once knew this, how that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed them that believed not. So there were several instances during the years of the wilderness wanderings where the children of Israel died or got destroyed, right? Sometimes plagues would come in. Didn't a bunch of them get killed with the
serpents.
The snakes, yeah, serpents, the calf, the golden calf. I mean, there were many times where God's judgment came down on them because they were either speaking out against Moses, Korah, right? Speaking out against Moses, speaking out against God, murmuring, crying, complaining, oh, we should go back to Egypt, whatever the case may be. He's saying, I'll put you in remembrance of those people who, once they were redeemed, once they were taken out of Egypt, they then rebelled. Next, verse 6, the angels, which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. He hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness unto the judgment of the great day. And then verse 7, he mentions Sodom and Gomorrah again. So, I was going to write all this up here on the board so far, but so we have the angels who left their first estate. We have Sodom and Gomorrah mentioned multiple times. God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with fire and brimstone. Any other examples that come to mind real quickly? Obviously, I had time to think about it. I have some other examples down here. But any other examples that come to mind as we're considering going out, what happens to people, or how does God feel about people who go outside his order?
For the look at Ananias and Sapphira, if you don't want to look at like a whole group of people, just an individual,
mm-hmm.
you're going, you know, there's lots of good examples.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, Brother Daniel.
And then every time that Israel walked away from the Lord and began worshiping idols,
yeah.
what happened to him? Destruction came.
Right. Sometimes taken into captivity, sometimes, yeah.
Wars, sometimes, yeah.
Right. Yep. And again, I had time to think, so I put some others down, but, you know, Nadab and Abihu, they offered strange fire. God consumed them.
Carrying the ark the wrong way.
David and Uzzah, right? Go, went outside the order. Nobody died. Yes, it's
crazy. If a man come in any other way, he's a thief and a robber.
Okay, yeah. If you don't come through the door, right? You go that, that's that guy goes along with Matthew 7, right? They're broad way which leads to destruction, right? Did I see another hand? Okay. Yeah, Hophni and Phinehas, Eli's sons, you know, they were taking the best parts of the sacrifices for themselves. They went outside the order of the priesthood, basically. So lots and lots of examples. But that's important. We have to consider those examples. That's part of going back to what we know. But this is also, I mean, this is real life, whatever you want to call it. This is data. This is stuff. That's the experiment is showing us. I really want those bronze or those brass pennies or copper pennies. I want those to be gold. I really want them to be gold. But you know what? The experiment's showing me the results so far maybe are not what I'm looking. Now, I know none of this has to do with women speaking yet, but we'll get there for the Nathan.
It all draws out to show God's order, God's character, and who God is.
It does. All right, 1 Corinthians 12. And this, now we're going to get into a little bit of what Brother Alex was talking about and referring to. So, what was the purpose of spiritual gifts?
Confirm the word.
Yep. The confirming of the word. And, you know, like, we go to 1 Corinthians 11 a lot with, you know, the Lord's Supper. But I'm hoping tomorrow we'll get into the first part of 1 Corinthians. So he goes from the first part of 1 Corinthians, which has to do with a woman and the covering on the head, and then a man praying and prophesying and his head being uncovered, and we're going to look at that picture there. Then he goes right into the Lord's Supper. And so sometimes when we read the Bible and we study the Bible, sometimes we just go to these little sections of scriptures. And I do it too. I do it all the time. We just go to these little sections of scriptures. But, you know, Corinthians was written as a letter, not as chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9. Oh, in chapter 11, I'm going to put in 6 or 7 verses at the end about the Lord's Supper. He's writing this as a letter. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the context of the letter of Corinthians is important. Verse 12, or chapter 12, now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. So the subject now is spiritual gifts. And he says down in verse 7, the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit with all. For to one is given the Spirit by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, so on and so forth. Verse 11, but all these worketh that one and the self-same Spirit divideth to every man severally as he will. Now jump over to chapter 14. Chapter 14, verse 1. Follow after charity and desire spiritual gifts, but rather that you may prophesy. For he that speaketh in an unknown tongue speaketh not unto men, but unto God. For no man understandeth him, howbeit in the Spirit he speaketh mysteries. But he that prophesieth speaketh unto men to edification, and exhortation, and comfort. He that speaketh in an unknown tongue edifieth himself, but he that prophesieth edifieth the church. I would that ye all speak with tongues, but rather that ye prophesied. For greater is he that prophesieth than he that speaketh with tongues, except he interpret, that the church may receive edifying. Verse 12. Even so ye, for as much as ye are zealous of spiritual gifts, seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church. So, not only is he talking about spiritual gifts here, but he's talking about using spiritual gifts for the edification of the church. Now, that's going to be important when we consider 1 Corinthians 14:34. Because it doesn't edify the church. I guess I'll just give the answer, right? Doesn't edify the church for a woman to usurp authority or to speak out of turn in a church. Okay, so we always say the context is spiritual gifts. The context is spiritual gifts. That's right. But some of us know what that means. Some people don't know what that means. And when I said to somebody, because I gave him the answer that I had heard, well, the context there is spiritual gifts. I'll just tell you what my experience was. That meant nothing to them.
Yeah.
It meant nothing. Yeah. I knew what it meant, but it meant nothing to them. What is it? It just says, Brother Bill, I don't know what you're talking. I don't know what you're talking about. It literally says, "Let the women keep silence in church." I don't know why you're talking about spiritual gifts. So, this edification here. And that's why he says in chapter 13, the greatest of these is love. Love, the greatest, that's not just, you know, it's a cool verse to read at weddings. That, it's why he's saying, this is going to edify the church the most. Yeah, prophecies, tongues, all this stuff. But, you know, faith, hope, and charity, these three remain, and the greatest of these is love. These are what's going to edify the church. These are what's going to confirm the word as the church continues her ministry and her work down through the ages. Mm-hmm. So that this is the context we're getting here. All right, verse 22. Wherefore, tongues are for a sign, not to them that believe, but to them that believe not. But prophesying serveth not for them that believe not, but for them which believe. He's not saying prophesying and tongues are not useful. He's saying that in church capacity, which gift is Paul saying was going to be more edifying to the church?
Prophecy.
What?
And prophecy.
Prophesying. He's saying prophesying is going to be more edifying to the church. Was there a purpose for tongues? Absolutely. Absolutely. There was a purpose for it. It could be used to benefit. But he said, tongues. Where did you see it? Tongues was a sign for them. Tongues are for a sign, not to them that believe, but for them which believe not. Okay. Prophesying serveth not for them that believe not, but for them which believe. So he's just kind of saying what benefits the church? What is more edifying to the church? So, and this carries on down into the last few verses here. So we'll just keep going in verse 26. Well, 27, if any man speak in an unknown tongue, let it be by two, or at most by three, and that by course let one interpret. But if there be no interpreter, let him keep silence in the church, and let him speak to himself and to God. Let the prophet speak two or three, and let the others judge. If anything be revealed to another that sitteth by, let the first hold his peace. For ye may all prophesy one by one, that all may learn, and all may be comforted. And the spirits of the prophets are subject to the prophets. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. Okay, so we're following this trail. We're on the tracks. We're on the blood. Everything's making sense. Everything's lining up. Nothing is out of place. Brother Daniel?
I'm going to jump your gun there, but 27 through 30 is talking about teaching in the church, for the edification in the church.
Exactly, yeah.
And that is crucial in this, to know, just like you're doing, just write down the line.
Yeah.
What is he talking about?
Like he says in 30, as you just said, if anything be revealed, what's that? That's that teaching. It's that laying it out. It's in the church. Yeah. Okay, and then, bam, out of nowhere, 34, let your women keep silence in the church. Just out of nowhere. Okay, we're going to grab that, we're going to hold on to that, and that's our hypothesis. Let your women keep silence in the church, for it's not permitted unto them to speak, for they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for a woman to speak in the church. What? Came the word of God out from you, or came it unto you only? I'll skip the rest of these verses, but again, 40, let all things be done decently and in order. Okay, so order was to be kept. Last verse, let all things be done decently and in order. What the evidence is saying in this, what the experiment is putting out for us, is that Paul says, there could be confusion. There could be confusion in church capacity if tongues was used when maybe there wasn't an interpreter. Or if it was used for personal edification and not for church edification. If prophesying was used maybe out of order. Also, if a woman doesn't keep silence. Now, we're going to harmonize that with 1 Timothy 2 tomorrow. Because this doesn't mean she has to be a mute. Okay? She's not to usurp authority. She's not to go outside of the authority or the order that God has already established. You know, some people say, well, she can't ask a question. Okay? Don't challenge. There's a difference in asking a question and challenging the authority, or even trying to teach from the pew. That happens sometimes, but there's not really a good stopping point here. But we'll stop with this passage, I guess, tonight. But you know, he says there's going to be confusion, and this is not just some outlying verse that just popped into this letter here. This fits. It fits in this trail. It fits in this pattern here that we're seeing. It fits in this order. And we've got to keep it in context. So, all right, let's stop right there. We'll go ahead and stand.